Suppose a global imitation takes 3 to 5 years. Then what happens if the world changes? If the world changes faster than your implementation can handle, and all your organization changes are faster than the implementation can handle, you're always running behind. You will never finish. And that is so critical. That's why we believe that you have to get time to value done faster in order to leverage the capabilities, but also to look at improvement steps after that, instead of having rolled out something that is already 3 years old.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nessel & Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nessel & Associates, Dr. Jack Nessel.
Hey, Jack here. In this episode, we will discuss a specific ERP vendor, Infor. What is Infor? How are they unique? Objective research suggests that there is one best ERP solution for each and every unique organization, but what does that really mean? The organization needs to take the time and effort to find that one best fit without making assumptions. In fact, research suggests that ERP system selection, implementation methodology, and partner selection is critical for a successful ERP organizational change project. So in this episode, we will further explore a specific ERP vendor and get their thoughts on ERP trends, ERP differentiators, and much more. So today, the title of our episode is ERP Vendor, Let's Explore Infor, with Arsenin Rodriguez. Arsenin is Vice President of Development at Infor. I assure you, we will hear some wonderful ERP organizational change insight on this episode. So without further ado, joining us from the Netherlands, Arsenin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
Good, good. Well, thank you again for joining us today. I'm really looking forward to sharing some of your experience and insight in the Infor product with our listeners.
Excellent.
So, Arsenin, just really quickly, before we get started, just a quick intro here. Our listeners may know there are nearly 100 discrete manufacturing ERP vendors. Some ERP vendors cater to specific industries, while some cater across industries. Some come with industry-specific configurations and have hundreds of pre-configured business processes. Some cater to specific niches with little configuration. Some have been around since the beginning of the ERP era, and some that we don't even know about yet will bring to the market new and exciting products with creativity and innovation. We also know that ERP solutions utilize different models and often cater to different business needs. And some have all the bells and whistles and try to be everything to everyone, while others are very industry specific and cater to a niche market. They often employ technology differently and have different approaches to functionality, implementation, and business modeling. And ERP vendors also have competitive differentiators that drive how they advertise and approach the market. For instance, there are free and open source ERP, and there are proprietary ERP vendors as well. And there are ERP vendors that focus on add-ons only. So I think what really matters and what really makes for an organization's success is being mindful of how critical the triad, what we call the triad here at Nessel & Associates, which is the people, the process, and the technology, is, and hence the true differentiators that ERP solutions and vendors bring to the table. So as mentioned, today we will discuss Infor and their true differentiators, the definition of success, ERP selection, ERP success rates, ERP challenges, and the future of ERP and emerging technologies. So Arsenin, thanks again. And first, if you would please further introduce yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Arsenin Rodriguez. I work a long time at Infor and its predecessors. I started actually in 94. So I've been around the ERP market for a very long time. I've done very large implementations, global of nature, also in North America and also in Europe. So my background, I got a master's degree in business economics and IT technology. So very well fitted also to understand the complexity of the technology itself. And right now I'm living in Miami supporting our U.S. organization.
Thank you again. I think our listeners are in for a treat today as you share your experience. Before we get started, I do think it's prudent to mention that NNA is vendor neutral. While in practice and research, we do work with ERP vendors, their partners, and vendor-specific subject matter experts every single day, we have many ERP vendors or their partners queued up to be on our podcast as well. Nonetheless, NNA approaches ERP selection in an academic research-based way. Please contact us anytime to learn more. In our conversations with our ERP vendor colleagues, we, NNA, take a vendor-neutral approach with open-ended questions so that our listeners are more informed and that we leave it up to our listeners to reflect. That being said, Arsenin, in general, what is Infor? Please elaborate more on Infor and what is it and who are your customers?
So Infor is an organization that delivers industry cloud solutions to our customers. And our customers are operating mostly in the manufacturing space, either being in a discrete environment or in the process environment or in the small and medium businesses. What we're trying to do is actually what you started off with, is that not all ERPs are the same. And we don't believe that one ERP can solve the problems of everybody in the world. So we're dedicated by industry. And what that means is that we created the capabilities inside the solution set that are needed in order to operate that organization on a very, you know, detailed level. And what that means is also that our deployment should go faster and should be more cloud ready, because you don't have to change the engines inside your the application to increase the automation, what an ERP does. So we have a cloud solution by industry, where we have included best business practice. We also have an initiative to go on with time to market to reduce the effort to implementing. And that's something that we can talk about today also.
So Arsenin, how would you define ERP for our listeners exactly? If you had to give me two or three sentences and define ERP, what does that look like to you?
So for me, an ERP is actually the information connectivity inside your organization. When you operate an organization, and like I said, we are working mostly in the B2B manufacturing space, is where every entity of the organization does something that affects somebody else. An ERP system helps you manage that information chain across those entities in order to get a higher level of automation across the organization and enterprise. And that could be in international activities, that could be on very specific activities from internal divisions and departments. So the ERP is kind of the nervous system that bounds those entities together and ensuring that everybody looks at the same information, the same data, and has one version of the truth. And ERPs are really good at that, understanding financial impact on activities, understanding impact from sales, forecasting, planning, all the way to procurement, warehousing activities, aftermarket services, transportation, project management. So that's the full scope of an enterprise.
I really like that definition, the common nervous system of the business, and it provides one definition of truth. I like that. That's good. So Arsenin, suppose you're leading a kickoff meeting for an organization that is just starting an ERP implementation. How would you define and describe for them success in terms of an ERP organizational change? What would success look like?
Success will look like, in my opinion, if you achieve the goals of that implementation. Not every implementation has the same objective and goals. It also depends on the maturity of the organization where they're at from an integrated technology standpoint, ERP-wise. And what success is that you're able to run your business and achieve those goals, either looking at a better insight in the organization from a reporting and analytics, or more automation in the business, less Excel spreadsheets, less manual work, and that the organization has adopted those best practices of that industry in order to execute their business. I would say, well, and of course, the on time, on budget things are quite important too. But a real success is, are you able to run your organization more effectively with the new solution?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and Arsenin and I had a conversation with a practitioner not too long ago, and their definition of success was based on objectives, of course, and, you know, your common project management metrics, you know, on time and on budget. But they also said that perception is a big metric. And I thought that was interesting. In their definition of success, they included, you know, stakeholder perception. So that was interesting. But, well, thanks for that, Arsenin. So my next question is, would you agree that ERP selection is one of the most crucial decisions to be made during the ERP organizational change endeavor? So like the selection process itself?
Absolutely. Because what you choose is what you're going to live with.
Yeah, right. So Arsenin, sorry to interrupt. So just to follow up on that. So as you know, there are many hundreds of different vendors in the ERP space, as I'd mentioned previously. What then would be your general advice to organizations when looking to select an ERP solution?
Well, first of all, I really strongly believe that there needs to be a very high mapping on business requirements versus application capability. If there's a mismatch, you're already starting off minus one. And the reason for that is that the industry focus, if the ERP is not built for your industry, it either has way too much or it doesn't have enough to get that through that automation, to support the business processes, to support the critical requirements that you have in your business. So selecting a lower fit. And of course, you can talk about, you know, cultural size, international ability to implement. Those are, of course, also important. But if the system right up front doesn't match the needs of the organization, that mismatch will translate in time, cost, effort, all the risk, all of the things you don't want in an implementation.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. Such a critical piece of the process for sure. So with so many options then, Arsenin, and so many marketing and sales approaches, and many organizations having never been through an ERP selection previously, how can organizations focus on looking at the true differentiators with ERP vendors? So in other words, I've mentioned this before in previous podcasts, and it's not really meant to be negative, but you know, I tell people and our clients all the time that during the sales pitch, you can often swap logos on the same sales slide deck and leave the rest, and they all seem to be saying the same thing. So what do you say? What are some of the things to consider when trying to understand the true differentiators between ERP options during the selection process? And I think as our listeners will learn today, Infor certainly has some competitive differentiators, but what's your thoughts on that? How can you help our organizations just kind of understand what to look for in terms of true differentiators and, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff when going through the ERP selection process?
Yeah, so first of all, if that organization that is trying to convince you of an ERP that they need based on what they want to have as an organization, if the ERP that you're selecting is not focused on your industry, it also means that this organization will not be able to understand the best business practice, give you that advice, because during an implementation, you will need advice on how to optimize the configuration of the ERP for your business. So if that organization is not focused on your industry, it's going to be hard to implement because you're missing so many components, especially if you've not done those selection process before. So it's very good to get somebody to help you out. That's always good. But you have to understand immediately if this ERP vendor understands your business and your market and your industry. If they don't, yeah, it's going to be very difficult to find them, because then you just get a large messaging exchange about all the capabilities that are in the application and not ranked by importance and necessity for your business as an industry. So I would say, you know, I really understand the question, because how can you see, sometimes you don't see the forest because all the trees are in the way, but you have to look at what are they focusing on?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you also why this is important. And this is something that people forget because they're not looking too long forward. If an ERP vendor is not focused on your industry, also the roadmap and the capabilities they're going to build in the future for your industry is going to be less important to them than if they are focused on your industry.
Yeah.
And that's something that safeguards you going forward, especially in a cloud deployment where you're getting capabilities improvements over time. And if all those capability improvements over time are not for your industry, the solution just gets more and more complex and deviates from the necessities of your business.
Yeah, great insight. Thanks, Arsenin. And I think part of the takeaway for our listeners is during the selection process, I think what you're saying, Arsenin, is not just important that the sales team, let's say, displays the knowledge of the features and functionality of their product, but they display their knowledge and understanding of your business, of your industry. And I think that's a key point.
Yeah. And then just to add one thing to this, because it's actually that you mentioned here, the sales pitch and the logos on the slide, you know, always look at the application itself. The more demonstration you get, the better feel you will get how this application could be your future solution. Don't buy that from slideware.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. So Arsenin, how would you describe your general understanding of ERP implementation success rates in the field? You know, just in general, if you had to say 60%, 80%, then maybe describe why you feel that way. But what's your thoughts on that? What's your general understanding of success rates?
This is a very perceptive question. And the reason is, if you have not met your goals and you still are live, are you considering that a success, or are you just went live? That's a, in my opinion, that's a huge difference. If you look at implementations, I think nowadays you get up to the 70-80% of implementation. And this also depends by vendor, by the way. So now we're talking general, not Infor specific. And what you see is they just throw either more time or effort or financial more money at the implementation to get to a point where it can work. In my opinion, that is not really a good success rate. It just means you convert it to a new application, and it may even go backwards in time in the automation that you need for your business. And that is very hurtful. Then, you know, some people declare that success because the application runs, but at what cost, what impact to the business is not looked at as a part of that success. So an ERP implementation, I always see, is almost like a marriage. You will have your ups and downs, but in the end, you got to be happy together. If one of the two is not happy, then the ERP implementation, for me, is not a success.
Yeah. Well, in Arsen, and you touched on a point there that I think is true, and it's actually supported by research, and that is people's idea of success changes throughout the course of the project. And one of the reasons for that is because every single, especially a large-scale ERP go live, there's a productivity dip. You know, there's a learning curve. There's a little bit of a dip as the organization gets up to speed. They get their cadence right. They get their rhythm. They tune and they tweak. But throughout that whole process, you go through a dip and then you kind of come back out on a up, I guess, a curve that's heading in the right direction. But one thing that we find in research is that that definition of success, even by the same people, or idea of success, can change throughout the life cycle of the program even. You know, so it's based on metrics, as you mentioned, it's based on perception, it can be based on time. You know, there's a lot to that idea. And I think I appreciate your honesty when you said in general, in the field, you know, somewhere 70-80%, I think, is being quite honest. So I appreciate that.
Just to, can I add a little bit to this? Because this is a really important piece. And there's two factors that are very important for success of an implementation. And the first one is time to value, because otherwise you get implementation fatigue. You're losing focus, you're losing people, you're losing motivation. And what happens is people go through the motion without that thinking about how can we make things better, and they just want to end that implementation. The second one, which is actually worse, is that during that time, suppose a global implementation takes 3 to 5 years, then what happens if the world changes? If the world changes faster than your implementation can handle, and all your organization changes are faster than the implementation can handle, you're always running behind. You will never finish. Mm-hmm. And that is so critical. That's why we believe that you have to get time to value done faster in order to leverage the capabilities, but also to look at improvement steps after that, instead of having rolled out something that is already 3 years old and doesn't apply to the new world anymore.
That's a great point. That is great insight, Arsen, and I appreciate it. And that's so true. The idea of fatigue is absolutely significant in the idea of the time value idea. And, you know, the world is changing. And when you and as I have been engaged on large global projects, things do change quite quickly. And if you don't deliver quickly, you find yourself more reacting. Well, that being said, Arsen, and let me ask you this then, in terms of the, you know, failure rate in general, what would you say are some of the most significant challenges then in a ERP organizational change effort that may contribute to these failures and challenges? What are some of those, I guess, influences look like?
Yeah. So an ERP, it has an impact to the organization. And the question is, can the organization describe to the organization itself why it has to be done? Why are you going through this process? What is the outcome? What are the benefits? And if that is accepted by the people that are not only implementing, but also the people you're affecting by the implementation, you do see a higher adoption. People understand why. And that's why, you know, on one side, training, and not just training on what the application does, but why do I do an extra step so I solve somebody else's problem with 20 steps? So the whole chain becomes better. In order to accept that change, you have to also remove emotional aspects of the organization. You know, what will my role be? How will it affect me? And the less time spent on that, the organization in itself will a little bit, I won't say rebel, but they will have reasons why not. And also, if the organization is not strong enough from a management decision standpoint, those things linger on and they become worse over time.
Yeah.
Because that change impacts people. If people understand what the impact does to them, why it's necessary for the organization, you see a much higher adoption of that change.
Yeah. So in other words, internal alignment, communication is highly relative to adoption, you know, really making sure, because I think that has a lot to do with stakeholder motivation as well, right? That's a really good point, that if everyone is aligned on the purpose and the value and the mission, then you're more likely, I think, to have more motivated stakeholders that take ownership and drive the project.
Yeah. And then you also set yourself up for continuous change, continued improvement, because if you can see it going, because an ERP implementation is not, we're live, now we're done.
Exactly.
That's just one aspect, right? So you gotta keep moving. The world is keeping, the world is changing. Yep. Your organization is changing. So you gotta get that as part of your DNA is adopting that change. And the higher you set off from the acceptance in the beginning, the more you will be successful going forward.
You know, that's great. You know, I tell people all the time that the ERP implementation, you're just building the foundation. You know, that's just the tool set for continuous improvement opportunities for years to come. You know, so you just put that foundation in, and if you do it well and you put the right pieces in place, then the whole idea is to give you opportunities for that continuous improvement in organizational performance for many years. So it's a good point. Arsenin, one question I definitely want to get in on this conversation, and I can't think of a better person to ask this question, is what is the future of ERP in general? What are some of the innovations and emerging technology that's driving ERP in 2022 and 2023 and forward? You know, what's that look like to you? Is it AI, chatbots, predictive analytics? What's your thoughts on that, and what's Infor's thoughts?
Yeah, so this is a very key question, because like we said before, an ERP is going to be there longer than just the initial implementation. Some ERPs, I know still have customers that are on a 25 old ERP and they want to move forward to a more modern one. So you're looking at a very lengthy period of time. So that innovation is very key. Where is it going? The ERP itself needs to open up to have other things in the world connecting and drive automation. And that could be artificial intelligence that finds a correlation between a certain weather condition and the predictability of maintenance or the predictability of failure to increase customer success. That's just an example. Chatbots where necessary can help you maybe to do things that you didn't know before what to do, or to find things easier for you. Predictive analytics, always important. What happens if I make this decision? So what you see where ERP in the past were there to automate the business transactions in a more integrated way, what you will see is that connectivity, IoT, a lot of people call that digital transformation, but actually reflecting more and more the real world in the digital world and understanding what's happening, what are the impacts from outside the organization that actually could influence an activity inside your organization. The second thing is, if you still see how many organizations are just, constantly behind in what the data they have, and transforming that into information. And that could be because they're global or they have different divisions or different units. Having that one view on what the business does without, importing, exporting, manipulating, but see the real truth of the holistic overview of your organization. Mm-hmm. That's also getting more important. Data fabric. Where does data come from? Who owns the data? What data is centrally versus locally, depending on where you are in the world and what you're doing as a business. So you see those things are happening around the ERP, affecting the ERP, and making sure that the outside things from different divisions or even a different app or your product that are influencing the ERP behavior itself. Yeah. The last thing I really think where things are going is more decision support. So, I have a shortage. What is my answer to the shortage? And what does that do to my organization? I can buy something and expedite something. But if the margin is already low, do you really want to do this for a one-off customer? Do you want to impact your margin and the rest of your customers because of that one customer? Mm-hmm. What are the impacts of decision made on the floor that actually affect the overall health of the organization? That is valuable insight to companies, because then you make a decision what's best for the business, not the easiest way to solve the problem in inside the system itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So Arsene, just to drill a little bit further on that question, and for our listeners that may be considering Infor, in terms of the Infor product specifically, then what would you say are some of the emerging technologies that Infor is actually building or plans to build over the next 1 to 3 years that you think will act as a competitive differentiator for Infor? And, you know, when you talk to different ERP vendors and you kind of go through that selection process, and we've had some others on our podcast, a lot of them are talking about this idea of AI and predictive analytics and so forth. But would there be any one thing that you're able to share with our listeners from Infor's perspective that you feel is a technical differentiator, the way you're building it into your product?
Yeah, so what we have done in the cloud suite is it's not just an ERP. The cloud suite, the cloud solution actually comes with a technology platform, and we call that InforOS. And in InforOS, we do a lot of things that are either application agnostic or are more in the technology platform, like artificial intelligence. But here's the thing. You also don't want to have a lot of data scientists understanding the data in order to get the AI running. So we are much more from a modeling standpoint saying, okay, our ERPs, because like I said before, we just don't have one ERP. We have one for discrete, one for process, one for the smaller market. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we do this, either you have too much or you don't have enough. There's nothing in the middle. So with that, we have a higher focus on the industries that we serve based on either process or discrete manufacturing. So the importance is that technology platform can help you not only to do things like integration and workflow, but also analytics. And if you have a data lake that is actually a representative of the data inside your ERP, but without having to use the ERP logic, now you can use that data for insights. Now you can get a product that you built actually sending you information about the behavior of that product in order to make a better product. So what we're focusing on is making sure that technology framework is supporting the applications, right? Enabling the connectivity to the physical world. And we're really focused on that because it drives more value from the whole solution. It's not just the ERP, it's the solution set, the reporting, the analytics, and the platform that together drive that value.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you said earlier, it's kind of that holistic picture, right? It's the holistic solution, bringing all the pieces together and integration. Well, great answer. I appreciate that. I think that would be very helpful for our listeners. So Arsene, let me ask you this. What do you think is more likely? One, a near perfect success with no major challenges, or two, some challenges but the organization endures due to strong culture and therefore successful? So number one, a perfect implementation with hardly any challenges for whatever reason, or number two, you always have challenges and you go through some pains, but you can endure and you'll still be successful. But that requires a certain degree of, I would say, organizational culture. What's your thoughts on those two?
Of course, the perfect success with no major challenges, I think that is not likely to happen. And it's not because of the applications. It's also because where a company starts. If your data management is not done well, and that happens with acquisition, different sites, different countries, and you lean on Excel and other, you know, manual activities in order to run your organization, that data conversion is typically also a very big factor in success. So a near perfect success with no major challenges, you're probably doing an uplift from a previous ERP. You know the data sets, you know where you want to go. So the challenge will always be there because change is a challenge on its own. People don't like to change. But the organization needs to be ready to endure it. That's something, a strong culture helps, strong decision making. Management sometimes is not aware how much impact they can have just because they're not involved in the implementation. The way you are guided through the implementation and the decision-making process is so vital to do that in a timely manner, because no decisions actually just prolong the implementation, cost, fatigue, all of the things we talked about earlier. Also, what the cloud did is if you were operating in a multi-tenant cloud like we do, you can't just change everything. That is not possible because you're impacting the tenant itself. So the higher fit you have from a functional standpoint for your industry, the less likely you need to change the application to modify it for your business. What that does as a result is you don't have to write, you know, test scripts, functions, CDs, TDs, test them all the time. Because that is customer unique. Now you're looking at something that you're invoked in the solution set. And that brings the capabilities also down from change in the future. You never build, design something for the future. Unlike what we have to do, we have to look at different, you know, companies, different countries, how it works with other modules when we design a new capability. A customization, let's say like that, doesn't. So the more perfect you are from a mapping scheme, the more time you can spend on data conversion and other activities, testing, training, organization readiness, you don't have to worry about changing the solution. So that is where I think cloud also is starting to see, is that you don't want to change so much in the cloud. Sometimes you're not even allowed to do that in the cloud. But also, it doesn't lean itself to be able to take on new innovations over time, because you created something that blocks that.
Yeah, great explanation. I think there's a lot of variables to success. And you try to, I think the best you can do is mitigate and be prepared for how you react to challenges, not just try to prevent the challenges, right? Because there's just so many variables. But I do like, you know, how you're emphasizing the idea of when you go through an ERP selection, it really is about, in my view, in my opinion, there is one best fit for every organization. And the organization does owe it to themselves to go out and find that one best fit. And what I mean by that is, to your point, the closer the product is in terms of functions and features to what you need for the business, the better. And then how well that product models your business. So you got to consider the modeling piece of it. You got to consider features and functionality, but you also have to consider other aspects from, and certainly from a project management approach and implementation approach. And, you know, I tell people quite often, Arsenin, that an ERP organizational change effort is not a transactional event at all. It's not going from A to B to C to D, you know, with a perfect straight line. It's a transformational event where you have these ups and downs along the way. And I think that there is a difference. It's a transformational event, not a transactional event. But that being said, you know, Arsenin, talking a little bit about the process, as I just mentioned, I think, as you know, because as you just mentioned, the implementation process and the methodology is crucial. But what more can you share with our listeners as to how you feel your implementation process is a differentiator from the other ERP players? So with Infor specifically, any thoughts for our listeners in terms of the way you actually approach an implementation? Can you provide a little more insight there?
Yeah, well, the one thing I say, you know, most vendors have an implementation methodology they follow because, you know, they've done it typically for a long time and they have something structural in place, which is good. A complex thing like an implementation without methodology is almost like chaos. Yeah. So that is very crucial. What we try to do, though, is a couple of things. We have implementation accelerators that has the best practice in mind. So actually turn it around. Instead of saying, this is what I need, you can also say, hey, can I live with this process in my organization to do my job? And if you can do that, then you're adopting not only a best practice, but now the adoption is much higher because you don't have to tweak, create a new report, create the capabilities outside the system or inside the system with an extension layer that we have where you can manage, you know, customer unique needs. The second thing, what is really key is that, and this is where I think our ERP is a little different, is that we design in a fashion that things are changeable over time. And you say, well, why is that important? Well, I've done implementation. You always have that progressive insight. You have that change during the implementation. And to be able to turn on and off capabilities over time and after implementation is a very successful thing to do, because you do not have to know everything up front in order to create a configuration that is best suited for the business, for your organization as a customer. So in that sense, not all your ERPs are the same. We also know about ERPs. Once you set something, it configures the database and everything else. And if you want to change it over time, then you almost have to re-implement. That is devastating to the ability to change over time. But also our time to value initiatives, we really want to reduce that time to deploy. From creating the tenant all the way to the implementation and after implementation, the faster that is done, the more you are able not only to get a return on investment, which is financially, but also the adoption to the organization, as well as the adoption of change over time. Yeah. And if you can do those things, it becomes almost like, hey, and we have customers now right now that said, we're doing things monthly in the cloud now. We adopt to new things. And in previous years, we've done that on a premise solution. And it took us, you know, we did something every 3 years. This is just amazing for them. So that's something that you see with customers that they really appreciate, is having that continuous ability to change without having to re-implement the solution set.
Yeah, absolutely. So Arsene, you mentioned a couple of questions ago, the idea of customization. And of course, you know, this idea of feature function fit, I would say, to the organization. But what are your thoughts on ERP software customization in general? Because customization can be a good thing in order to better fit the operational processes, but isn't too much a danger?
Oh, absolutely. See, customizations are normally done in order to get that better fit. There is a capability you need. It's not in the solution set right now. It might be on the roadmap, whatever the reason is. So first of all, we want to get away from customization, but more extensions. And why would you need that? Suppose you're in a business that does something really unique. It's not an industry-based thing. And what you don't want is to put that in an ERP that everybody gets and nobody's using. So making it industry-specific is the level you want to go. Or even sometimes within that industry, where in the supply chain do you operate? So it's good that you do this for where you differentiate yourself as an organization against your competitors. So if you do something unique, and there's nobody has that capabilities, it could be justified. But here's the danger. If you do it too much, then you're also putting yourself, I always say, and I take the analogy, it's almost like a jacket you made. It's perfectly to order, right? it fits perfectly. And now what? Now you're working out and you grow some muscles. Well, guess what? Jacket doesn't fit. Or you go on a vacation and you have an all-inclusive for 3 weeks and you come back and the jacket doesn't fit because you gained a little bit of weight. So that is the danger. And the other thing is customizations are not built future-proof. Customizations are not. They're only built in how you operate today, typically. Because making it future-proof is more expensive. And, you know, you have to do something to the solution, maybe parameter settings. I have very rarely seen people doing it in that way. So what that actually does is that jacket fits right now, but maybe not anymore in the future. And that's the danger of, are you creating something that holds you back over time? Can you imagine that an organization now is held back because you built something to optimize one piece of the process?
So Arsene, do you have a magic number then when an organization looks at the fit? Is there a magic number for customizations or even extensions? Is it 5%, 10%? What's the threshold where even though almost every organization, even if it's the best fit possible out of the box, requires a certain degree of adjustment, let's call it, or tweaks in the form of customizations or extensions? So I guess to follow up on that, Arsene, can you, number one, just maybe explain to our listeners a little bit more about how you're defining and using customizations versus extensions in the Infor context? And what would that limit be?
Well, and this is a little bit dangerous with limits. In principle, I would say zero.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
If you could run it as is, you're setting yourself for a very smooth ride going forward. But that's also not realistic. So we have a little bit of a concept called 60-30-10. Or 60% is just common, you know. POs, sales orders, forecast. And then there is 30% what we call configuration-wise. You need to activate a little different process in the solution. So it's not coding. It's just activating or deactivating settings in the system that are typically not done either by that industry or you have a division that does a little bit different and they want to tweak for their division a little bit of process.
But that's true configuration already built into the product, right? That's hitting switches, essentially.
And then you could talk about 10%. Now, the 10%, when I did that global implementation a couple of years ago internationally, there were 66 sites in 4 continents, right? And the switches, we did a lot with the switches because they were international. Sometimes you have a different way of doing financials because that's required in that country. The 10%, now you're talking about a deficiency between what the system is capable of doing and what you need. And now you need to disposition that and say, okay, how do I want to solve it? And what we often did in not only how to solve it, but we said, what are the one requirement that makes that extension very complex. Because, you know, if you want to solve five requirements in that extension, and one of them is making it 10 times bigger than it needs to be, can we live without that one? And so we have a very good discussion on what is really needed for the business and what makes the configuration so complex that you're actually spending too much time, effort, and there is actually no ROI on. So that's another way of looking at that 10%. I have seen implementation 98. We have done implementation with zero customization. It's only in the reporting area, but that's natural. The difference, what we also have between customization and extension, in customization, that's typically what we do in our terminology, in Infos terminology, is something that we did on-prem. You know, you could change almost anything you wanted. In the cloud, it's not possible. So how do you allow an organization to change something in our application suite, but don't break the multi-tenant environment and be able to take on the next improvement area, which is coming, in our case, every month? Every month, we are applying that for our customers in the multi-tenant environment. So an extension is a capability you build for a customer that doesn't break the solution set as itself. And therefore, you are future-proof. And that helps, of course, in moving forward. And then in one time when we have customers who had that, said, oh, that feature is coming out in 5 months. So at that time, we're actually going to remove that extension.
Yeah.
Right? So the difference between an extension and a customization, in our world, customizations can make you stuck, and an extension makes you future-proof. Mm. And that's why we do not want customizations anymore. We really do extensions. Sure. So that 10% is where we, if you say the fit, there's no fit there. And I've seen implementation 98, 95, 80. If you go below 80, then you need to think about either do I do something that is so unique nobody else does in the world, yeah, and it's worthwhile, or maybe you pick the wrong solution set.
Yeah. And I think that's where part of that pre-sales and pre-selection comes in, is really to the best of your ability as an organization is trying to figure out what that might look like for the vendors that you're considering.
Maybe also to give you a practical example, because we have thought very theoretical. So my two industries I know very best as a vice president for industry and strategy is, for instance, aerospace and defense. And when you do defense and you have a DoD contract, there are things that you have to have. You need to have DPAS, the Defense Priority Acquisition System, in order to reprioritize supply. Mm-hmm. You got to send that to your supplier, or contract flow down, or the definition of fees and penalties within the contract. So those capabilities are essential. And if you don't see that in the solution set, then you have to wonder if you actually have a good aerospace and defense solution set. In high tech, there are differences. In automotive, there are differences. So without those capabilities, you just increasing the misfit of the capabilities of the solutions versus what you need as an organization. I just thought having a concrete example would help the discussion in the podcast.
No, that's great. Thank you, Arsen. And that's very helpful. I'm sure our listeners will find that helpful. In fact, it has been a fun conversation so far, Arsen. And no doubt our listeners, I think, will find a lot of useful insight. So thank you very much. But I do have one more question for you.
Okay.
This is a question we ask on every podcast, but, you know, as fellow practitioners, we absolutely benefit from learning from our colleagues and friends, you know, both the boots on the ground and the researchers. But how would you summarize this conversation? If you could just distill the conversation into one golden nugget for our listeners in terms of what you want to leave them with today in terms of ERP organizational change, success, and selection, what would you leave them with?
I would leave them with a couple of things. The first one is, if you start off wrong in the selection, you're just setting yourself up for a lot of additional work afterwards, and maybe you set yourself up for failure. So find that ERP that matches your business, matches your industry, can show that there can be benefits in selecting that solution, not only from a solution standpoint, but also from a best practice, and giving advice to the organization, why not do it this way? This is a good practice. Then the second thing is the implementation itself. And that is where a lot of the dimensions of, you know, emotion and change and implementation effort go in. And that's where you also need to do something fast. You need to create success over time. So you keep that momentum. You keep the people motivated. into wanting to do change over time and not just one time just because they want to get to the goal life. Mm-hmm. And then with that, that solution also needs to be flexible. We all know the stories about, you know, what species survive. It's not the strongest, not the biggest, not the fastest. It's the one who adapts faster. Mm-hmm. So the faster you can adopt in the change in the future, you will find that such great value to the organization. Because one thing we guarantee our customers is things will change. Nothing stays stable. So that adaptability is essential for the rest of the 10, 15 years you want to deploy something.
Absolutely. Arsen, and I really appreciate your experience and expertise. Thank you so much for your time today. Can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you or learn more about Infor?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, it's my arsenrodriguez.rodriguez@info.com. You can always send me an email and we can have a discussion. The second thing, of course, the website, info.com, and we'll have, you know, there's chat availabilities. There are contact points if you want to have more information about Infor. So there's always a way to get in touch. We're a global organization. You know, we have a lot of locations around the world. They're also in the U.S., so feel free to contact us if there's something you like to know more about or want to hear about Infor. Feel free to do that.
Arsen, and thank you again, my friend, and be well, and we'll talk soon.
Excellent. Thank you for the podcast, Jack.
You bet. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, #TheERPOCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.